with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, and KMAN and sports director John Kurtz.
Well, it was close. We got Wyatt Thompson, and then I'm filling in as backup quarterback today. No John Kurtz, who's on his way back from sunny Florida, although we had Florida weather almost a little bit here, Wyatt. I mean, we could have played a little baseball this weekend.
I think we could have played a lot, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, really nice. Being in Austin Friday night and Saturday, couldn't believe how nice it was Friday night. When we got in there, we flew and got in there a little bit late, landed about 7:15 or so, went right to the arena, went and had a little shoot-around kind of thing, and then got back to the hotel. Well, it's 9:15, and a handful of us are going to go down the block, couple, two or three blocks, and eat a little at a little Mexican place. I was surprised at how busy it was at 9:30 at night.
It was crazy. Gorgeous, right?
Yeah, but we sat outside.
Yep.
The next day it's 85. It was 70 something here.
Yes.
I don't know how you beat it.
You couldn't. It was. Yeah. I was a little bit at first when they announced that trip. I was like, oh man, baseball, John. That sounds pretty good. Like maybe I should have studied a little more play-by-play in college because
sure,
Florida and baseball sounded all right and. Manhattan, Kansas, and Saturday and Sunday afternoon was pretty darn good, too.
I was looking at the baseball stuff today, and we'll talk about it later, I'm sure. But, you know, to go 3-1 on that trip and have that kind of weather, now you go to South Carolina, then home. What will the weather be like a couple of weeks from now?
42 and windy. Pretty much guaranteed, right?
Well, I would think 42 and somewhat windy wouldn't be all bad.
Hey, we've played in worse.
Oh, yeah.
Here for home openers.
Yeah.
So that's all right. I'm kind of excited for baseball to be back, just big picture, not only K-State, but spring training, and that gets me fired up this time of year. Well, let's talk a little bit of hoops, Wyatt. And, of course, you just got back from Austin, Texas. K-State bounces back on Saturday, and they get the win against the Longhorns 64-61 against a University of Texas team, and Coach Smart's having a rough go of it this season. This was an important win for K-State, not only because you got a stretch of winnable games to close the season, which K-State needs, but you really needed to bounce back after the rough performance against Iowa State. You fell behind so early in that game. Getting out to a quick start was going to be key, and you got it on Saturday.
One of the strangest games that I've seen for a while, this coming out of the mouth of the play-by-play voice of the Cats, who, let's be honest, they've been on a little bit of a roller coaster ride here and have had halves where they've been really good and halves where it's not been so good. But I don't know if it's been quite as the wide range that we saw on Saturday. K-State in the first half Saturday, and you know these numbers, they hit 16 of 21 shots. That's 76.2%. That's the best half they have ever had in a half of in Big 12 history. In the second half, they shot 31.8%, 7 out of 22, but won the game.
Right.
And so that's, I guess, what we're talking about with the roller coaster ride. It really was a good win. Going into it, I felt like it was one of those games where everybody expected you to win it, and then when you do, you probably don't get the credit that you really honestly deserve. I know Texas has had a tough year. They're 10-17, and they're 4-10 in the league. But when you watch them with that McDonald's All-American center at 6'11", yeah, and those two quality, what I'll describe as very electric athlete guards, they're not the world's easiest out. And they made some adjustments along the way. The 1-3-1 zone in the second half was, I thought, a great move by Shaka Smart. They put Malik Isom, who hadn't been used a whole lot, at the top of that 1-3-1. It created some issues for K-State, not only at the top of the zone, but the back of it with Jared Allen. And with the length of those guards in the middle, it was problematic to find some seams and to try to get, you know, some angles to get to the rim and some mid-range jump shots. It was a different game that way. But at the end of the day, K-State did find a way, and it was such a much-needed win. And looking at some of the bracketology stuff today, they're on the bubble, but they're right there. So it was a big win.
So when you talk about that Texas team, and that it was interesting that you mentioned the length of that team. They made some pretty elite plays at the rim throughout the course of that game. There was a couple, you know, not only are they dunking the ball, but they made some defensive plays at the rim that were pretty impressive. But at the very end of that game, the flip is it's our guy, it's DJ, who mm-hmm. makes an elite play at the rim.
Yeah.
Walk us through that final sequence because, of course, the game's on the Longhorn Network and the story that they're telling, I don't know if it was necessarily the same story that everyone else was telling.
I've heard that a lot today, by the way.
So they're arguing that the call should have been a foul on the floor. And now where you guys were, because we were listening to your call,
right.
From your end, was the review at the monitor, was it always about how much time was left, or were they looking to see whether or not that call was on the floor or whether it was going to be an and one?
You know, I'm not sure I have the proper answer to that. I think they were looking at all of it, honestly. You know, I learned a long time ago doing play-by-play that you, right, wrong, or indifferent, you have to call what you see.
Yeah.
I'll try to make this story short and make it compact and understandable, but it was obvious from the start after the miss that DJ is tipping the ball, okay, and is being pushed from behind. I think most everybody in the building saw that. However, one of the officials, a young official by the name of Brooks Wells, and this is what I saw, was waving like you do, waving it off and pointing to the floor like no basket. Okay, then they get together, he and the other two officials, and I think the other two officials saw it the way Stan and I saw it, the way Casey saw it, the way our bench saw it. Most of the viewing audience and listening audience either saw it or heard it, that the basket is good.
Right.
Yeah. And so the moral of the story is that they get together and they look at it. I think they did look at the timing too, but they kept it at 1-6. It was obvious that Yancey got him from behind as he's tipping the ball. It was an incredible play.
Yeah.
It really, really, truly was. And so you just kind of wipe your brow and say, yeah. Let's go home.
And big
let's
picture, it didn't matter because no. DJ made the free throw. Even if he makes one or two free throws, they didn't really get the shot off in 1.6 in time to even make a challenge at the other end. So
yeah.
It really wouldn't have mattered. You got the W either way. This team has missed DJ since the Baylor game. Obviously the injury, and he sits one out against West Virginia. Pretty limited in his time against Iowa State. Tell he's still not right, but he gets to start in Austin, a huge lift for K-State.
Well, it was, and it really was for me personally, I'm just going to be honest about this, a little bit out of left field. And I mean it this way. I think DJ, up until even Friday night at the little shoot-around at the Irwin Center, really wasn't moving all that great. But I was not expected, after visiting with the coaches Saturday morning before heading to the arena, because I always go to the arena quite a bit quicker than they do, I was of the belief that Xavier Sneed would start again in DJ's place. And yet when they flashed the starting lineups there, DJ was there, and he played 20 minutes in the game. He had not played that many minutes in a while, and that's not a ton, but it's a lot compared to what he'd played the previous couple of games, where I think he had 11 minutes against Iowa State and was completely ineffective. And I can't explain to you why he was so much better, but he was.
Yeah.
He really was. He was much more active. I've seen him rebound better, but he was moving a lot better, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And that was big.
He's an interesting guy. The way that he sparks this team, you know, just from afar, K-State plays different when DJ Johnson is engaged in the game.
Yeah.
And it's not always because he's throwing up a ton of points or rebounds or things like that, but he's solid, he's where he needs to be, but his energy level, I think, helps the whole rest of the squad.
Well, I agree. I think that's perfectly said. DJ has always been a high-energy guy. He's just a little bit more refined now as a basketball player, and it makes a world of difference. I mean, we saw, you know, in Morgantown, West Virginia get 50 points in the paint. Now, yes, some of that was because of K-State turnovers and runouts and that kind of thing, but still, I've got to be honest and say there's no way that happens if DJ Johnson plays in the game and is healthy. He can – 6'8", 6'9", probably more 6'8", I would think, 235, 238 pounds. He's really a lot more athletic than you might think. He's a good shot blocker for his size. has really good hands and feet. And when you put all of that with the motor, he's just an invaluable piece.
Yeah.
I think we've seen in this little stretch where he wasn't normal, DJ, how different K-State looks without him.
Absolutely. And he's a dude, especially as a big, late in the game, who you don't mind having at the free throw line because more often than not, he's also going to knock down those free throws.
Well, the experience helps there. He went through a stretch where he wasn't doing very well. You know, last year, he really closed with a flourish and basically finished at about 70% from the free throw line for a guy who
hadn't started out terrible, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this year he went through that stretch where he was not good. Now he's starting to bounce back again. He works at it, and I've always said this, but I very much appreciate his work ethic and what he brings to the table.
So the other big point in the game, of course, second half, K-State's up. They call the flagrant on Austin Budke, and he gets run from the contest, and you get free throws, and then you get a bucket. That was that was a pretty dangerous stretch for K-State.
Yeah. Again, this was one where I didn't see it as
hard foul. I didn't think it was an ejection foul.
I thought flagrant one, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Flagrant two I thought was a little much. I know Coach Weber was looking at the video coming back on the plane. I heard him say that there was a little more there than what he thought initially, like in live action.
Mm-hmm.
And it did happen down to the south end of the arena, which would have been farthest away from Coach Weber and our broadcast location.
Right.
And he excuse me, he did get him from behind. And I think did get him on the side of the head or the face or whatever a little bit. But, again, I'm thinking that's a pretty harsh penalty at that particular point for that foul. And I believe I would be sitting here saying this if that was Oklahoma State.
Right.
And you don't have any loyalty towards K-State with the deal. It just seemed like an awfully odd call to throw him out of the game for that.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was just one of those ones, and even after seeing the replay, maybe there's a little bit more contact, but at the same time, it just, I don't know. It seemed a little harsh for that one.
Yeah, and it's easy for us to sit here and talk about that. And
multiple replays
afterwards.
You couldn't
pay me to be an official in the Big 12 these days, or anywhere else for that matter. Most of the time, those guys do a really, really good job.
Yeah.
There are times when they frustrate all of us, but and that was kind of one of them because I thought that was excessive. But they saw it in real time the way they saw it. Then they looked at it, and in their mind, we saw what they thought. and Budke went to the showers.
Well, it's Wildcat Insider with Corey Dean, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the Wildcats. And coming up, we'll get a little look around the Big 12 and Big 12 basketball. But as you look, this was a big – I mean, you can throw around must win at a lot of points in the season, which starts to get a little out of hand.
Yeah.
But with the way that this schedule sets up and K-State getting what's effectively the bottom half of the Big 12 – you do have an opportunity to close. Getting that win in Texas, at least if you just look at the records and the schedule, this sets up okay to make a run.
Yeah, I think everybody saw it that way, you know, especially in the last couple of weeks going into that three-game stretch with Baylor, Kansas, West Virginia. You knew how hard it was going to be. And if you could get one or two of those, how great it would be. Now you look at the back part of that and, you know, the six games after that, well, you stumble in the first one at home against Iowa State. That was it was kind of like the TCU game. It was a punch in the gut. They didn't really have a lot of energy early in the game. It cost them. And yet then they follow that up with a road win. K-State's 5-5 on the road this year. And that was a big one in Austin. Again, you can say what you want about Texas and their struggles and they're young and they're this and they're that. But a win is a win on the road in this league. And if you take Kansas out of the mix, it's been hard for everybody.
Yeah, indeed it has.
Yeah.
We'll take a look around the Big 12 coming up next year on Wildcat Insider. It is only 22 days away from the NCAA tournament, if you can believe that. We are getting dangerously close,
yes,
my friends.
Yes, we are.
That's all the way. Next, Wildcat Insider continues here on News Radio KMAN.